2024, we welcome DB Woodside to the podcast. You might know him as President Wayne Palmer in 24. He was one of the best presidents in 24 that the fans loved, and we were very sad when his character was killed off in season 6. And we appreciate you joining us today to talk about 20 years of 24 and your experience on 24. So to get started, how did you get involved with 24?
Oh my God. Well, I was, I think I had just come off doing Buffy. Okay. And I was looking for something interesting to do. That experience was so good, so incredible. And I was in a relationship, and I think that summer the relationship had ended, and I was devastated. And I think in between doing shots of vodka, I started watching this show, and I got hooked. And I remember calling up my manager, and asking her about this show. And she had already had a client on it, Reiko. And I told her, I said, I don't care what I have to do. I want to be on this show. This show is so good. I have to be on this show. It was different. It was hard hitting, intense, all the things that I love to do. And so she just kept knocking on that door. And I think I went in once or twice before for different characters. And I think it was the third time that I went in. I could be wrong about that. It might be the second time, but I think it was the third time that I went in, and they cast me as David Palmer's little brother. And I was very happy about that.
What's really interesting is that your story of getting onto the show is unique from everybody else that we've talked to. We've heard so many different versions of getting on, but I mean, you came into it kind of the way we did. Like, I binged the first DVD set in over a couple of days. And I remember going to meetings bleary-eyed, because that was 4 or 5 in the morning going, I got a meeting at 7, but I got to get one more in.
Yeah.
But like you said, it was so addictive. Did you watch season 1 and 2 going in?
I watched seasons 1 and 2.
Okay.
And I just loved it. But yeah, a lot of people don't realize that 24 was before people came up with the term binge watching, right? Because it was pre binging, right? And this was the show, in my humble opinion, I think this was the show that started that off. Because from what I remember, and even when I talk to people don't remember that for the first, I think, 2 seasons of 24, it was a what they called back then a show that was on the bubble. You know, right. It wasn't a wildly successful show.
Right. Yeah.
And people have a hard time remembering that because of how successful it became.
Yeah.
But I think part of the deal that Fox made, and once again, I could be wrong, because it's some time ago, but I believe that part of the deal was the guys over at 24 said, listen, give us another season, but don't interrupt our show. Don't break it up. Just show it straight through.
Right. Yes.
And I think when they did that, the show became a hit because people then realized, okay, so I'm not going to get into it. And then, you know, it's going to break off somewhere. We're going to have some Christmas special or Halloween special. We're just going to go all the way straight through. And I think the first season that did that was season 3. And I think that's the season that I came.
Which is in line with the pace of the show, right? When you it's a steady, relentless. I know we've heard the word pulse several times in these conversations. There was a pulse to it, and I remember because I binged season 1, then I started watching season 2 live, and I remember there were 6-week gaps. There was like, well, we'll be back in April. I was like, what? You just dropped that on me, and now you're going to give me 6 weeks where I got to find something else that's even close? And as you said, it became appointment TV because you know the world would stop. I mean, Monday nights we cleared our schedule, and it's just the way it was.
And to add that, like I became hooked on 24 in 2009, so I was in grade 11 at the time. So I had the luxury of binge watching 24.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
DVD. And, but yeah, I studied the ratings at 24, and 24, it was interesting. Most shows, when they start off high and then they go, they lower in the ratings, but 24, it began sort of an 8-9 million viewer mark in season one, but it kept growing in season 2, 3, 4, and 5 when it reached its peak in season 5 in the ratings.
Yeah, which is wild. To the point of where we're at now, sorry, Justin, where we're at now is that people are now finding it on Disney Plus all around the world.
Yeah.
And our group is gaining 100 members a day.
Yeah.
Of people that are discovering it for the first time. You know, it's the whole landscape of TV has changed in the 20 years since the pilot aired.
Fans are really dying for a 24 revival with another 24.
Listen, I've always said this. I would love for them to bring some kind of limited 24 back, but I would love for them to bring back that original cast. I think that cast that they had season 3, season 4, I don't know how they would do it. Maybe they would, you know, but I've always wanted to see that. And I don't mean any disrespect for the cast that came after or the cast.
Right. Yeah.
But it was just such a large, diverse, intense cast.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that cast put back together.
Yeah. Boy, Regina King was season 4?
Mm-hmm. No, Regina King was season 6.
That's right. Yeah. The danger of doing this podcast is we talk to people from all seasons. So yeah. I'm watching 9 one day, then I'm watching 2, and I'm like, where am I right now?
Any chance that Wayne Palmer is still alive and can come back on a future 24?
Here's the thing. I heard that Wayne Palmer had died off screen years later.
Yeah.
I actually had never even known that. So I
don't believe it.
Yeah. So as far as I'm concerned, I never saw a dead body. So in my mind, I've always seen that Wayne Palmer is alive out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've always felt.
And I really love the relationship between Wayne and his brother David and Wayne's relationship with Jack. You know, Wayne's relationship with Jack, you know, was great in season 3 and 4. I remember one scene in season 3 when Jack Bauer was in Mexico and undercover. And I remember Tony Almeida from CTU called your brother, David, who was president at the time, to inform him of an undercover mission that Jack, he kind of kept secret from David. And when David learned of the undercover mission with the Salazars, I think David said, oh, Jack is a fugitive from the law. But then when Tony played the recording of Jack Bauer explaining what he was doing undercover in Mexico, David disagreed with the whole mission. But then Yearline was like, he was like, I disagree. He's like, Jack Bauer was, you know, right or whatever in keeping you in the dark. You know, he protected you as he should have.
I always got the impression that Wayne understood Jack's instincts and trusted Jack's instincts better than most people on the show.
Yeah.
Were we wrong in that or?
No, I think Wayne. What I loved about Wayne is he was a political beast.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So he understood that things that might be happening were okay as long as his brother wasn't informed. Right.
Right.
There was a wall between what the president should know,
right,
and what was really happening. And Wayne understood that. And Wayne appreciated that because Wayne felt like Jack knew what he was doing by keeping David in the dark sometimes. And so, yes, I definitely saw Wayne in Jack's corner pertaining to a lot of his undercover missions.
Yeah.
I love that relationship.
In the premiere of season 5 where Wayne sort of thought Jack was involved in killing his brother.
I mean, that was his brother.
I liked Wayne because Wayne was a lawyer like myself, and the phrase plausible deniability.
There you go. Yeah.
I've never forgotten that. I never heard it in law school, but I heard it on 24 and I went, that's what Wayne represented.
Yeah, absolutely. To the fullest.
Yeah, yeah. I'm shielding my brother, giving him plausible deniability. And yeah, one of the key words that comes up too is optics. I think that Wayne understood optics and more than anybody else, you know, certainly on the staff for sure. And given the fact, again, we're the nerds that have watched the show over and over again, you replaced Mike Novick, who Mike Novick had literally betrayed him. You know, that you come in right after that scene where he forgives everybody for turning, you know, for basically kicking him out of office. And then Mikey's like you did to Sherry. There's the door, you know, like powerful TV.
Yeah. I love those scenes with Dennis. I mean, some of my favorite scenes that I've ever done were in season 3. There was a scene that takes place in, they're in the underground bunker, and there's a scene that takes place between the two brothers. And Wayne is really good at playing his part, right? Sticking to his role. But every once in a while, you see those big brother, little brother moments.
Yeah.
And the way that I would always imagine it is those, it's quite possibly those RFK, JFK moments. When never in front of people, because they had too much respect for each other. But every once in a while, in a closed room, those walls would drop and he would be a brother.
Right.
And
talk straight to him.
And there is one where he lost it with him.
Yeah.
Where he just thought that what his brother was doing was ridiculous and let him know as a brother, and David shut him down.
Right.
But there was so much anger in Wayne as he was leaving his office that you just felt that was a true, authentic brother, like a brother versus brother moment.
But, sure.
But definitely always steeped in love.
In my experience, I've worked with bands in the past that were made up of two brothers that were the kind of the head of the band, and they would go at it in the studio.
Yeah.
like gangbusters. But it was, as I said, it was rooted, for the most part, it was rooted in love. Yeah. But I've seen brothers in real life go head to head. For you to be able to portray that with Dennis is pretty amazing.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I mean, I loved acting with Dennis. I mean, he's just such a powerful actor. So eloquent, you know, so smart. And it's why I always say, I mean, some of my best scenes that I've ever done as an actor, and we're talking about, you know, 15 years ago.
Right,
know,
so right.
Scenes are still with Dennis Haysbert. Just has some great, great scenes. And, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, when you're an actor and you're knocking around for a while, the one thing that you can never account for or expect is when you're going to have chemistry. You know, you can have a good scene with someone. If you're in a scene with another good actor, it's going to be a good scene. Yeah. But when you have chemistry with someone, it leaps off the page and you're watching it and you feel it. And there's something magical. There is a something dynamic. I think I had an acting teacher once say, when two people have chemistry, they change the molecular energy in a room.
Wow! Right? Wow! Like
you can just it's palpable,
tangible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And I there are a few people that I've been blessed to have that with in my life. One is Trisha Helfer. And one is Dennis Hayden. You know?
Wow.
It's just incredible. I love acting with that guy.
Yeah. And you had the benefit of watching the first two seasons before. We talk about this on the show a lot. We visualized, I said 24 in many ways helped the world to visualize a lot of things. And one of the things that it helped us to visualize was a black U.S. president.
Yes. Yeah.
which, you know, when you, if you had asked me even at the time when that aired, if that was ever going to happen in my lifetime, I would have said, no, I can't see it. I couldn't see it. And so we talk a lot about the impact of helping us to visualize it, to see a black family in the White House, and then it happened. I mean,
yeah,
to say that 24 can take a lot of credit for it, no, but there's got to be a little bit of, you know, and you coming in, right? You actually saw Dennis as the president.
Yeah, I got to say, I think the show, and listen, I'll say this out loud. I think the show had a lot to do with it. I think television is still the most powerful medium,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because you are privileged to be beaming into somebody's house. And I think for Americans, most people, they got a chance to see something that they'd never really seen before. And they got a chance to see it not in just a some 2-hour movie, yes, right?
Yeah.
But they got a chance to see it every single week from the comfort of their living room.
Yeah.
Nothing was strange about it, and it was consistent. And so I don't think people realize how powerful representation is, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
In just a simple way of the idea didn't seem so absurd anymore.
It right, didn't right.
So, groundbreaking. It seemed you're like so many people are watching the show and they love the show and they love that character.
Right.
And they're seeing it every single week. And whether they're talking about it, whether they realize how it's changed them, it doesn't matter, right?
Right, right.
But they've just gotten used to seeing that. So when you have someone like Barack Obama coming up and he's young,
yep.
good looking, his family is beautiful, his yep. wife is incredibly smart. It just seemed like, and was for us, a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who could have known what was going to come after, but that's well, pretty yeah. But anyway.
it's over now. It's over now. That was the JR, you know, Who Shot JR dream sequence the last 5 years.
Somebody had a terrible idea for a spinoff. A terrible idea. It was terrible. They canceled the show.
And it was dreaming 24 hours a day.
Yes. Oh, God. Oh. No, but anyway, I think Dennis and the way that he played that character, I think it had a lot to do with it. I actually remember, so no surprise, I'm a huge Obama fan, and at the time that I was doing 24 and finishing up 24, I got a chance to meet him.
Wow.
And I got a phone call from, I don't know, it's some agent or publicist at the time. And he was coming to Hollywood for a fundraiser. But in between, I think, going to fundraisers, there was going to be a select room of musicians, actors, comedians. I think there were probably about, it's a small room. I think there were probably about anywhere between 30 to 45 of us.
Wow.
And I was so lucky to be one of the people in this room, and I was so excited. And, you know, he has I'm forgetting the young man's name, but he was fantastic. He was Barack Obama's body man.
Okay.
Body man. And I think his name was a former basketball player, Reggie or Reginald, just tall brother.
Yep.
So nice, so sweet, and so as up on pop culture as Barack Obama was, he still had Reggie there because Reggie was young, you know,
yeah, right,
kind of like whisper in his ear as he was going around meeting people, and he whispered in his ear about 24, and yeah. Barack Obama came over to me, and you know, we shook hands, very, very nice, very smart, and he said to me, he goes, so, do you have any tips for me as president? And I'll and you know, I was gripped with anxiety and fear, and I just shook my head no. And you know, I was just such a huge supporter of his, such a huge fan of his. But that was just one of those moments. Reggie Love,
That's Reggie. Reggie Love. Wow, yes. So, very good.
Obama was a big 24 fan too.
I don't know if he was a 24 fan, but I know Reggie Love was a 24 fan.
Okay.
What's interesting about everything you just described is that on the show Veep, there's Gary. I don't know if you watch Veep at all, but Gary was the person that would walk with her and tell her exactly what you just explained. This is who this is, just in case you know. I thought that was a made up person, but that was his.
No, it's like, yeah, he was really there, and it was his. I think he was his kind of plug into pop culture. You know,
sure. Yeah, yeah.
He's running for the president of the United States. I really have time to keep up on all the cool trends and, you know, what's hip he has some bigger things to be thinking about. So I think it is a great thing to have someone there who is, I think it keeps you in touch with what's going on in the country. I think it keeps you in touch with what people are talking about.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, obviously when you're in that world, you can exist in a bubble, you know?
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. It's important to have someone normal there to let you know while you're moving in that world, while you're operating in that world, hey, this is what's going on out here. So that, you know, when he has a few free moments, he can plug in and pick up on what we're all talking about.
Yeah. You know? So what you're saying is that there can be a president that doesn't sit up till 4 a.m. watching TV and tweeting about it.
Yeah.
That happened. Okay. All right.
There's more important things and it's to do. And he can have someone step in for, shouldn't be any longer than 5 minutes. And
right,
just
right. You
know, catch him up on the things that are not that important.
Ratings of shows and
this is the show people are talking about, you know, about around the water coolers. A show called 24.
Right, right.
Yeah. Really, all as long as it took me to say that is as much time as it should be occupying. The
For
rest
sure.
Of it. Right.
Yeah. That sounds like a great meeting.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. It was great. It was. Just, you know, as we all know, just a lovely, lovely man. Incredibly. Miss him every day.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that too. I would agree with you that 24 had more than a small impact on the actual, you know, again, the ability for us to see it. And again, it was presented as matter of fact. This is the way it is. Here's his chief of staff. You know, that's the way it is. And then, of course, the chief of staff becomes president. What excites you about working with Dennis again?
Well, like I said, I mean, he's just a lovely individual, powerful actor, very generous, very, very giving. And it just, he feels like my older brother. I mean, there's just a familiarity there that is comfortable. And it's just a known thing, you know. And there's something about our, like I said, our chemistry on screen together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's undeniable. You know, I'm the kind of actor that I always want to work with people that pushed me to be the best version of myself,
which right.
The best that I can be. And Dennis Haysbert is one of those actors.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just
I remember watching live the last couple seasons of Buffy. I think I got into Buffy at season 4 and then watched it, you know, right through to the end. So I remember seeing you in season 7. And then the next time I saw you was on 24, which was the show that was just slightly above Buffy for me. Like 24 is still, but it was like, oh, I know that guy. We in our community on Facebook, we're a group that says, hey, this is what DB's doing right now. Go check it out. He's on Lucifer. So we're very much about pointing people, because there's in 2021, in contrast to 2001, there's more than enough TV out there, right? And there's a ton to choose from, and nobody's got time to watch everything. So we use 24 as our filter to say, wait a minute, he was in 24. Okay, that means we should check out this show, or it gives us a little bit more of a credibility. So all we do online is share those kind of stories. This is what you're doing. I understand that you were directing an episode of Lucifer.
Yeah, I just finished my first episode about a month and a half ago, and I got to say it was the hardest thing that I've ever done in my life, and it was the most fun that I've ever had in my life. So this is definitely something that I'm going to be doing a lot more of.
Excellent.
And it was just an incredible experience to be given that opportunity to have the kind of support. The crew was amazing. I don't think people in the production office get talked about enough.
Mm-hmm.
They were absolutely, I couldn't have asked for more support, more help. They gave it. They were there. At times, they held my hand. They let me know it was going to be okay.
Right.
It was just a fantastic crew, fantastic producers. Nathan Hope was a producing director first season. He was the one that put the directing bug in me.
Mm.
Over from Bruckheimer, Christiane Reed, and I know Aaron's on here. Aaron, I'm so used to just calling Joan that I don't know Joan's last name off the top of my head, and I've known Joan for the last three seasons. But Joan is the Cunningham. Thank you.
Nice.
Joan Cunningham is the line producer over at Lucifer, and she was, oh my God, I could not have made it through without Joan. She was unbelievable, and there's so much goes into it that people don't know about. I mean, so people like Joan, Nathan, they were there 2 months before I even stepped foot on the stages, right? So they're bringing me into meetings, allowing me to shadow, teaching me every step of the way. They will just always have a place in my heart. So it was incredible. It was incredible. And it's something that, I wish I had started 10, 15 years ago, but I'm just happy to come to it now. And you're never going to get me to stop. I hope to be directing something several times every single year until they are dragging my dead body off somewhere.
Well, I mean, coming from Lucifer, the dead body, is a right? Dead body really ever dead? I don't think
so. Not really. So. Not really.
Was there anything from your experience on 24 that you took when it was time for you to direct your own episode?
The most important thing I find is that you have to take charge. Taking charge doesn't mean, excuse my language, but it doesn't mean that you need to be an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No. You actually don't. You can take charge and be kind, but I think that you have to take charge. And I think when you're a young director, it's a business that's beautiful, but it's also filled with a lot of egos. It just is. And that's okay, because part of the job, if you want to be a director, is learning how to juggle all of those egos. It doesn't mean that people are terrible. It just means that they have needs and wants. And you have to understand that. At the same time, keeping an eye on time and what you need to accomplish. I jumped into this crazy world during a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic.
Right, a month and a half ago, yeah.
Yeah, with a bunch of COVID restrictions, which meant that we had less time. So it was crazy. Every day was stressful, but like I said, I had so many incredible people around me to assist me, and this was something that I've been ready for a long time. So I think the biggest thing was just jumping in there young and letting sometimes a lot of people who are older than you, you have to take control in a nice, calm, reassuring way to
right.
Let them know that you actually have a vision and that they can trust that vision. And I think it's difficult sometimes because you have people who are technicians at what they do. And so I'm sure that I scared a few people because the way that I see directing is I'm a very visual person, so I come in and I think about it as a painting, you know. So I'm trying to paint an image that might not always seem to make sense in the moment as they're watching it, but it's about kind of building that trust. And there's no better feeling than painting that image that maybe people didn't understand, and then when they see how you put it together with the music, with how it's colored, all of a sudden they get it, and that's a wonderful thing. So I'm a director now. So
yeah, you are. Yeah. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
That's amazing. And you're going to do more.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're going to do more when there's less restrictions.
Yes, which I'm excited by, because I was having a mini heart attack every day. And so, you know, it's funny because the directors that I shadowed told me in a weird way that this was the worst and best time for me to start, because when I go to a normal schedule,
yeah,
I'm going to be flying through it.
You're in literally in the trenches.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that next job as we start to crawl out of this this horrible hole that we've been in for the past year and a half.
Yeah. Excellent. Congratulations again. That's awesome.
Thank you very much. Awesome. Really great.
Now, what was your favorite experience and favorite moment on 24, and how'd you like working with like the writers like Joel and Bob and Howard and Manny and Evan? Like, what was your experience like working with the writers and producers and Fox and in the studio and Brian Grazer?
I didn't have a lot of conversations with the writers back then, and I don't say that in a bad way. I was just one of those actors that I never really had conversations with. The one writer that I did have a few conversations with was David Fury, who I love. Okay. But David and I had a relationship from Buffy.
From Buffy, right.
Yeah. So so there was an episode, Lies My Parents Told Me, that David, I think he co-wrote and he directed. I think it was the first time. So we definitely had a relationship. So David and I would talk from time to time. Howard Gordon, who I love, Howard and I had a few great conversations. I think I only had one or two conversations with Joel. I didn't really get a chance to talk to the writers. So most of my experiences were with the cast and with John Cassar, who I love John. Yeah. But I had great relationships with people. One of my closest friends was on to this day. Was on closest friends, meaning like, you know, we definitely don't get a chance to hang out because he's living in New York and I'm here. So I surprised to the closest friends. I surprised say we have the same manager and it seems like we're more like brothers. Who you know, when we get together, it's like no time has passed, and that's James Badgedale.
Oh, right.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Played his partner in the third season. I loved working with Kiefer. He is intense. He brings an intensity every single day.
Yeah.
And it can knock you on your ass. But
that's what we've heard.
Yeah. But
in a good way.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been known to be described as intense myself. So
you appreciate it.
Yeah. So there's a kind of work ethic that I really loved. I think the thing about Kiefer that may have thrown some people off is he has a photographic memory. So that can be a problem. And so he can come into a scene having only taken a look at a new scene one time, and you've been working on it, right, all night, and he decides to come in and switch the lines around and give you some of his lines. He's going to take some of your lines. Yeah. And if you're a young actor, it can be unsettling, you sure. know?
Yeah.
But I loved that, man. I loved it. It kept everything alive and fresh.
Yeah. And the pulse.
And yes. And here's the thing. I will always say that I came into season three, by the way, just as a guest star that ended up recurring.
Right.
I don't know if this is true. I believe it to be true, but I heard that Kiefer liked my work so much that he went to the producers and said that you should make this guy a series regular.
So I believe it. From the conversations we've had, I believe that.
Yeah.
We've heard it from other people too.
So I love the guy. He basically really kickstarted my career. He believed in me, told me constantly, pushed me to be better. So I loved working with him. Of course, I loved working with Dennis, right? I just talked about him nonstop. He's just one of my favorite people. I mean, so much so that obviously I pushed for him to play God in this season of Lucifer.
Thank you very much for doing that.
Yes. So, you know, I really wanted to get a chance to work with him again.
Yeah. You use the word intense. Your arrival in the pilot of Lucifer, intense is an understatement. You arrive with a flourish, and you set the tone. Any backstory that we needed, we figured out in the first 3-4 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
Because you make your presence known. And continue to do so throughout the series, which is amazing.
It was that's one of my favorite pilots. I mean,
I agree.
It was just so much fun, and we shot that here in Los Angeles, which is rare nowadays. In Hollywood, and so you know, it was just so much fun. And that's definitely a show as we come to an end. You know, I'm gonna miss these people.
Yeah.
I've been a really really fortunate actor throughout my career to be able to be a part of some great shows, Buffy 24, Lucifer. So I'm also looking forward to the next job as well.
Absolutely. Know? Absolutely. I'd like to wrap up with this question, if this is okay. Buffy fans, Lucifer fans, 24 fans. Is there a difference between the three? in the way they react to you and the conversations you have?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, I've gone on record several times recently, so I gotta continue and just be honest. I would say that the Lucifer fans in general are my favorite.
Okay. All right.
only because of what happened, right?
Yeah.
The show being canceled, first us moving the show back to LA, then the show being canceled, then the show only getting one season, then the show getting one season. That was all due to the fans. I mean, these fans were really loyal and really made sure that this show is coming back. And so there was this love that they had that was just unmatched, and it was fantastic. So now, that being said, man, I love 24. 24 was the show that I pursued.
Right.
I went after. Yeah. Kiefer had been an idol of mine growing up. You know, I watched him growing up.
Right.
This was a show that I wanted to do. I was bleeding to do this show. So there is no way I have anything negative to say about 24 because as great as Lucifer has been, now that it's over, I'm trying to find another drama like 24, right?
Sure.
Because that's the world in which I want to live in.
Yeah.
The 24 fans, I find are mostly guys, fun guys that are intense.
Yep.
I love that because I'm an intense guy. and the buff, here's what's interesting about the Buffy fans. I don't have anything. I don't have anything negative to say about any fans because I've been blessed. Buffy fans tend to be Lucifer fans.
Sure, I can see that. Yeah.
So I think it all falls within that same kind of world, that same genre.
Right. As you were speaking, I'm thinking, could there have been a Buffy or a Lucifer without the Lost Boys? I don't know. There are elements, certainly elements of Lost Boys and Buffy.
Yes. Oh,
for
my
sure.
God.
For sure.
I just
sure.
grew up watching that show. You know,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. Movie. You know, so it was just incredible.
But, just a thought, just throwing that out there. There's everything's connect. Those three universes all connect.
Yeah, but I do want to see a reunion of 24. I do want to see 24 come back. I do want to see it try and get all of those actors together again.
I like your idea of bringing back that cast too. That's a great idea. Well, and again, Wayne Palmer's alive. We didn't see the body.
Wayne Palmer's alive. I don't care what they say. There is no body.
Thank you for, again, taking the time to talk to us today. And you, I mean, so many great experiences. So glad that you're directing. We're going to keep up with what you're doing. Absolutely. And we'll keep letting people know what you're doing.
You're an amazing actor. You played an awesome role in 24. Lucifer is such a great series. And
Lucifer's great.
And we can't wait to the next project that you star in.
Thank you so much, guys. Thank you.
Typical barrister.